Well, the Sharks have only played 2 games.
Yeah, well, no one wants to watch them play.
Oh, God. I sort of don't.
And that's why this season is sponsored by Ballast Point Brewery. Ballast Point Brewery.
I think we may have found our intro.
A step up from Miller Lite. Are we no longer a Miller family?
No, we're always going to be a Miller family, but...
Miller.
There's going to be extended family as well.
Okay.
And we welcome them with open arms. Welcome back to the Garage Hockey Podcast. I'm Felix Sicard, joined as always by Nick and Joe Berger. 2017-18 NHL season is underway, and just like everyone expected, the Vegas Golden Knights are undefeated, and so are the New Jersey Devils. Who would have thought?
I do believe we all called that, right, guys? Am I right, guys? Come on,
so
guys.
So we were going to do Eastern Conference prediction pod, but we kind of...
We're a week into the season.
We took a little while with that. No one really cares anymore. Plus, like, whatever predictions we would have come up with, I can tell just by looking at the standings, are not going to look good.
Right.
So, this might be a bit more of a laid-back pod, but I think that's fine.
I'm into it.
Probably just some general impressions on the season. Maybe some predictions. Who knows? I was actually... Last season, we did a podcast where we did... We kind of did like season superlative, so we did player most likely to like break out or surprise, player most likely to disappoint, and like teams and most likely to disappoint or surprise, first coach to get fired. We don't have to go through all of those, but that will kind of be, I think that'll be a good starting point. So if we had this discussion a week ago, raise your hand if you would have said New Jersey Devils, team most likely to surprise.
I mean, surprise? Maybe. I would have been looking at them. I don't know if I would have made them the team to surprise.
You would have picked the Flyers.
Nah.
Hey, man. Hey, nah. Dude, nah. No, because like, I've been saying this whole like I've been saying this whole time that like Philadelphia is where goaltenders go to die.
Brian Elliott, though.
And look, he's playing fine.
They're 2-2.
They're 2-2. So that
says absolutely nothing.
Their team is the absolute definition of playing fine.
They've allowed double-digit goals in 4 games, so...
They have.
Yeah. I actually saw the Flyers play up close. Was it this week or last week? I think it was this week against the Ducks. And, like, Nolan Patrick actually looks pretty good.
Yeah, he does.
He's going to be an NHL player.
Scored his first goal.
And a good one. Oh, did he?
Yeah, last night, I think. Yeah.
I saw him get his first assist, so...
That was a nice play, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it was nice because he was below the goal line, and he kind of, like, opened up the lane.
Yeah. Yeah. Who did he get that one to? Was it Provorov or Gostisbehere?
Yes, it was Provorov. Yeah. I'm a little out on Gostisbehere for now.
Are you really?
He skates well, but, like, I can't really decide if he does much else that interests me.
I don't know. I mean, my big thing... I was talking to my mom about this, and she was saying, I don't know about Gostisbehere. She was saying this before the season.
Oh.
And I
said... Have her on the pod, then.
It's time to bring my mom on the pod for some hot takes. And
easy
you,
there.
If everyone thinks, like, I'm, like, lukewarm, like, like, after listening to my mom, like, everyone's going to be like, Nick, where do you get this from? Because it's, like...
you were going to say something about Gostisbehere.
So... My whole thing is that, like, he was, like, because he had the injury last season, or in the, what's going on over there? Are you okay?
I don't know, Joe's looking at me, like, laughing, and I don't really know what we're laughing about.
No, I was laughing because...
This pod has already gone off the rails.
You said, you were talking about Gostisbehere.
Oh, yeah, you started
reminding him to stop talking about himself.
No, because you were talking about your mom, and, like, I love Anne, but, like, I mean... Hey. Anyway. We're the guys who show up to training camp like out of shape, and we use training camp. We're like Jaromir Jagr. We tell Glenn Gulletson, you know what? I'll tell you when I'm ready to play.
That's so accurate. He played today, by the way.
Dude, he looks thin. Like he looks like he's in shape.
So. I know. Yeah.
I mean, good for him.
I know, he's got the scruffy scruff going on, you know?
Even though he claims he eats, like, 6 muffins a day. I'm not sure I believe that.
Like, what does he have to do to, like, counterbalance that? I have no idea.
I mean, he, like, tapes some weights to his, like, ankles and, like...
skates at 2 a.m. after his game.
Skates in circles.
So, like, old
school. I think he's just a freak of nature.
Like, old school draconian methods.
The Flames might still be bad, by the way.
Fine.
I mean, they did win in
I'm
overtime.
I'm so fine with them being horrible for some reason.
Really?
I've been...
I don't care.
Do you just want them to leave Calgary? Is that what it is?
Well, the Flames want them to leave Calgary.
Apparently.
Well, no, the thing with them is, like, everyone... Okay, my big gripe with the Flames... This is so common of my gripes in general, but, like, I have nothing against the team. I just... Everyone's always saying, oh, they're the breakout team. They're the team that's coming up. It's like, well, when is it going to happen? Because I hear the same thing every year, and then they get swept by the Ducks.
Usually from me. I've been saying it for, like, 3 or 4 years now, and I'm sort of done.
But it's not just you. But, like, I mean, I get the enthusiasm. They have talent. They, like, now they might have some depth. Mark Giordano is also old. I don't know if people realize that. Like, I know I know no one paid attention to him until, like, a year ago.
Which is criminal, because he was, like, so good.
Like, legitimately, a Vezina.
Vezina, yeah.
Norris Trophy contender.
Well, the way the Flames were allowing shots, he had to be a Vezina candidate.
Right.
And up until they got a real coach.
Yeah.
This
is true.
But yeah, the Devils. I want to get back to the Devils because they're the team everyone's talking about. So we have to be like everyone else.
Okay, so let's be like everyone else.
Good.
All I'll say about the Devils is that I thought they were going to be fun to watch this season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, bad, but fun to watch. And right now they're 3-0, but if you look at all of their stats, they're getting outshot, they're getting outchanced, they're getting good looks. Their expected goals percentage is pretty high, which means they're getting quality shots. But, like, they're not good.
I mean,
they're not good.
That'd be the best thing for them. Lose every game 6-5, get a top draft pick.
They're like the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
entertaining, but winless.
Right. I mean, like, I was saying to you guys before the podcast that I was checking out Twitter and I wanted to see what all the buzz was about because everyone is saying how exciting the Devils are. And so
it's because so many teams are boring.
And this is true. Like, it's kind of a cookie cutter situation, but yeah. Like, I wanted to see, like, just how exciting they are, and I looked at their, at the stats for today's game against the Maple Leafs, and the only Maple Leafs player that was below a 50% Corsi was Connor Brown. He was at 40%, and everyone else was 57% Corsi 4 or higher for Toronto.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my god, like, what?
But that's a fun team to watch. They're getting out, there's a lot of stuff happening.
It sounds like it. It sounds like this is must-see TV.
Well, what I just like about it is that they're playing with house money this season. Mm-hmm. Because, like, they're not stuck to any bad contracts. And if anything, this actually works out for them because then, like, they could trade Corey Schneider or something at the trade deadline.
Oh, the Devils.
Yeah, the Devils, you know. I mean, you could maybe say that by the time they're fully rebuilt and, like, they've made a few more draft picks and Nico Hischier is, like, you know, he's fully there, fully developed, that maybe Corey Schneider will still be around, but I don't know. This is kind of a slippery slope for them because if they're too good, it's like, do you pull the rug out from under the whole thing?
Right.
You know, do you pull a Billy Bean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't think you do. I feel like, one, you just don't want to waste star talent in their prime, like Taylor Hall. But also, I think they're so starved to, like, be a good team again, you know?
Well, I mean, the thing is, they haven't really compromised anything if they're good this season. You know, they haven't. It's not like Florida, I think, in, like, 10-11 or something. Or it might have been the lockout season, where they just signed, like, 8 veterans and, like, squeaked out, an 8th seed.
Yeah.
And then lost. Like, you know, it's not like they did that just to say they made the playoffs. Like, they're on a nice path.
Yeah.
Like, whatever happens this season. So, enjoy it while it lasts, Devils fans. It may last the whole season. You never know. Every year, there's that team that gets massively outplayed and just finds a way. And they kind of fit the profile. They have a really good goalie. They have a brutal blue line. And they have some, like, skilled fast forwards.
Yeah.
So
the only thing for them is that they're in a tough division.
Will Butcher.
Hey, do you believe? Do you believe in my boy Willie Butch? The audible gasp.
The track record for a collegiate defenseman isn't great.
I feel that.
Did he win the Hobie Baker?
I'm not sure. I don't really know. I don't really pay attention. College hockey is probably the league of all the leagues that I probably pay the least attention to. Of the ones that, like, you know, I'm not counting the, like, SPHL or the Federal Hockey League.
I just remember hearing this offseason that a defenseman won the Hobie Baker for like the sixth time.
It might have been him
or something. So
it might have been him. But remember, like, Matt Gilroy?
I do remember that name.
If you do, congrats.
I remember that name.
But he was the same thing, like, hot commodity, made everyone wait. I mean, even Jimmy Vesey, like, a year ago. Jimmy Vesey's, like, what, a third liner for the Rangers?
Yeah, third, fourth line.
Which is, like, good. Like, that's being a millionaire on an NHL team is good. It's just, like, you know, the expectations have to be tempered for these guys.
It is fun seeing some names come out of the weeds, like Sonny Milano and Columbus.
Because, well, that's not out of the weeds.
No, because he would... No. Can I finish what I'm saying?
Be fair.
It was a high draft pick.
Yes.
But it was 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I feel like everyone just kind of forgot about it. And now, all of a sudden, here he is with four
goals.
Well,
I don't forget.
Oh, let it be said that Felix never forgets.
I'm the elephant.
You're the one that always remembers.
The reason I remember Sonny Milano so well is because he was like one of those viral YouTube guys, because he had the like crazy stick handling.
Right.
So I don't know.
You watched it 24/7 for like 2 days.
I watched him do like cool tricks with the puck. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, hey. So, anyway, about New Jersey.
I mean, what else is there to say about the Devils?
Just to put a bow on it, there are a lot of signs in the way that they're playing that point to them not sustaining this, and also they're in a division with Pittsburgh and Washington and Columbus.
Yeah.
And the Islanders.
And the Hurricanes.
And the Rangers.
Yeah. I mean, the Metropolitan Division, I think, is by far the most interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to be fair, like, I don't really like when people say, oh, this division is the most interesting, right? Because it's like, every division has its, like, storylines.
Yeah.
You know, like, people are kind of writing off the Pacific this season, but look at the Golden Knights. I mean, they've injected life into it. The Flames are letting everyone down. I mean, they're 3-1. But
hard pivot.
And you know, the Ducks are really beat up, so we don't really know anything about them right now. I'm kind of excited for the Canucks this season. I watched their shootout last night and it was so unentertaining. The Coyotes might like be terrible.
They might be terrible,
dude. I watched them against the Ducks, and they were just unimpressive.
Well, I don't mean to oversimplify it.
Clayton Keller,
hey, maybe Rookie of the Year, maybe. But look, I don't mean to oversimplify it, but
Will Butcher.
It feels like Arizona was destined to lose that game against Vegas.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, they.
I feel like that was just going
to
happen.
They were... I hate to say this. I'm not going to say it.
Oh, man.
Say it.
Okay.
They were on the wrong side of history that night.
You said it.
I mean, they...
the city of Las Vegas is on the wrong side of history.
Right.
Ultimately. But in the sports world, like, they had everything going against them. Like, a team in its inaugural home game.
Yeah.
And, you know, the passion of those fans. I mean, like, it's brutal, like the whole thing, you know, the Vegas Strong thing. Like, I mean, I applaud them for coming together, but it's like, what does that even mean, coming together? Like, these buzzwords, you know, we're gonna show unity.
Oh, hockey and buzzwords, go figure.
Yeah, right. Well, what was that, the code of ethics, or what was that big thing that everyone cared about for like a day over the summer?
Was that it? I don't remember.
Anyway, I am happy for the Golden Knights. I'm happy they're giving the city of Las Vegas something to cheer about. But ultimately, like, that's the beauty of sports, is that it makes people feel better.
Mm-hmm.
But call me a pessimist, but like, that's kind of all it does. So, I mean, obviously those guys are working the community. They're out there shaking hands, kissing babies. Like, that's great. You know, the one-on-one stuff, that's great. But, you know, we live in a time where sports is filled with activism. Look no further than the NFL. And I just think that I hate to bring this up, but like, you know, the whole White House Pittsburgh Penguins thing, you know, like Sidney Crosby saying this has nothing to do with politics. It's like, yeah, maybe to you it doesn't, but like, think about your place in the world and how people see you. I also don't think the NHL is losing any fans by the Pittsburgh Penguins taking a picture of Donald Trump. But if they're wondering why they're not getting certain fans, then they shouldn't look no further. You know? Like, here's my thing. Is like, we got really political out of nowhere, and I apologize, but I want to make this quick point because this is on my mind. We have to decide, as fans, and maybe we don't have to decide, but I just think there's this notion nowadays of like either athletes are activists or they're not, or like they have to be a certain way. And it's like, for a guy like Sidney Crosby, I understand why people are upset. He's the face of the NHL. He has all this influence and he's not using it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, these guys are people, you know? And like, just like we shouldn't force or expect someone to be an activist, you know, I feel like that goes both ways. Like, the guys in the NFL, they get applauded for it. And I feel like Sidney Crosby knew what the hell he wants, you know? And like, I know that might not be a popular opinion because of what he could potentially do with his status, but like, if you're not that guy, then don't force it.
Right.
You know, can you imagine Sidney Crosby being this, like, I guess, kind of divisive, opinionated person? I can't.
Right. I mean, you know, no one got into pro sport to be a political figure.
Well, I mean, but some people definitely have their views and their opinions, and that's great. That's what you want. I mean, like, the way Colin Kaepernick has gone about it has been perfect. He made his stand, and now his life is committed to, like, charity and, like, all these causes. I mean, you look at his Twitter feed, and he's completely, I mean, he's all in. He's pot committed.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. But that's his choice, you know? And I just think for the Pittsburgh Penguins, it's the same thing. Like, I know it does come off as tone deaf. It does come off as tone deaf. But at the end of the day, like, it doesn't, sports, that's the slippery slope of the intersection between sports and politics, you know?
Yeah.
And that goes back to my thing about the Vegas Golden Knights. It's like, I'm glad they're getting involved. And you know, and I think they're definitely giving money. They're giving their time, and that's great. But I don't know. I mean, there's just so much going on. It's
I think I needed to vent. Speaking about the league, you know, not growing fans from the stances they take. You know, these non-committal, standoffish, no personality stances.
Yeah.
I saw Bob McKenzie tweet a few days ago. It was about a picture of JT Brown when he raised his fist during the anthem. And he said that the unofficial view of the league is they prefer players not to make political or social statements. And
well, yeah.
I mean,
the NFL owners are now saying that players can't kneel at all.
Yeah.
You know?
But this is exactly like what I heard from that wasn't, you know, so much of the political aspect of it.
Yeah.
It was more of sort of the reins they have on the players of don't say anything outrageous, don't show any personality, just be quiet. Don't
lose his tickets.
Yeah.
Don't lose his seats.
And,
you know,
if you know, look at, you know, where sort of the counterpart to the NHL, the NBA, the season that runs at the same time. And, you know, you have all these characters and people watch because of the draw of the, you know, the players' personalities.
Yeah.
And the NHL is devoid of, you know, like, there's almost no one in the league with a personality.
Well, this is the thing that pisses me off. And I'm glad you brought that up. JT Brown gets, well, by a certain intersection of Twitter, gets, like, heralded for his, you know, for his display, which ultimately, whatever that accomplished, we're not sure. Hopefully he's doing something outside of that. But I mean, like, it's, and this is the thing, this is what this all gets to, is like, people will say, oh, that's his right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, like, if you're going to say that's his right over and over and over, why doesn't that apply to a guy like Sidney Crosby? Isn't it his right to not do anything?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's where this thing gets weird. That's why I don't like the First Amendment justification for these things. Because, like, no, it's not just that it's their right. It's like, this is potentially the right thing to do in general, right? So I don't know. Like, when I saw JT Brown doing that, first off, I thought that took a lot of guts, especially given the demographics of hockey. I mean, let's just face it. He's the only black guy on his team, and he's one of the very few black guys in the entire league.
Yeah, I think there was a part two to that, and it was, you know, if, you know, everyone started doing something like that, and it was like, well, they're only like 15 black guys in the league.
You know how hard it wouldn't happen for those guys to do that?
Yeah, it wouldn't happen every day.
I mean, in a Canadian town a couple of years ago, in like a charity game, Wayne Simmons was in, some idiot threw a banana on the
ice. I know.
Oh my God.
And this is Canada.
Yeah, it's fucking disgusting.
And that's, everyone talks about how nice Canadians are, right?
Yeah.
So I just think, like, It's shitty right now, man. Yeah.
And
it just doesn't feel like anyone has any good answers. Like there's the crowd, the social activists who feel like I'm going to raise my fist during the anthem and that's going to do something, right? And I did like how he framed it after. And I like how I think the athletes are definitely getting smarter about framing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Colin Kaepernick, for all the crap he's gotten, if you actually listen to his interviews, was way ahead of the curve with everything. He never once, he always made sure to make it about the issues at hand. He would talk about police brutality in his interviews, right? But people love to spin his words or whatever. So I just think it's ironic that now you see these NFL owners coming out to the field and taking a knee when they're not even going to hire Colin Kaepernick because he did the same thing.
Yeah.
Right?
And then thank God there were people like Shannon Sharp and Bob Costas who actually got the narrative back on track and said, he's not talking about the military.
No, exactly. It's bullshit. And that's why, when I hear, there's so much hypocrisy. There's so much crap in all of this. And it's so hard to follow. And when people say stick to sports, I kind of wish some people would actually listen to that because there's sports journalists, a lot of smart people in there, but also some really bad takes. Look at this Jamel Hill situation. Look, this is where I might lose some people. But look, she's totally within her rights to say whatever the hell she wants, right? And people like Jeremy Roenick today who came out and said, oh, well, I'm the most outspoken guy, but I would never say a bad word about my employer. Okay, so what are you actually outspoken then? Right? But I just think even for her, right? I think her head's in the right place. She's trying to make change, but some of those things she said, it's just like she must know that's going to get her in trouble, you know? She has to know that going into it. Like when you call the president of the United States a white supremacist, that's like a pretty loaded thing to say, even if you feel like it's justified.
I think with that situation in particular, a lot of people think that she got suspended for that what she said a couple months ago. And that's not the case. She her bosses talked to her and everyone, reminding them of ESPN's their social media policy,
terms of social media service conduct
thing. And then after being warned, she
did it again.
They drew a line in the sand. She was aware of it, and she
crossed it.
And she knows she's making a statement.
Yeah.
So good on her. You know, she's gonna get support from the people who probably are gonna support her anyway, and life will go on. You know, it is interesting because we talk about sports a lot of the times as entertainment, a distraction, and now it seems like we can't get away from. I mean, we can't get away from politics anymore. You know, even in sports. And I mean, I wonder how you guys feel about the whole stick to sports thing. Because on one hand, I feel like it is, if you do feel like you have something to say, you should always speak up. But at the same time, you have to understand that, yeah, sure, on one hand, the people following you, they chose to follow you, and you can say whatever you want. But the reason you're where you are and the voice you have is because of sports, you know? So you can't just kind of piss all over that. I don't know.
My personal feeling about the stick to sports, stick to movies, whatever your profession is, has always been, at least in America, among American citizens, we all get a vote.
Don't get me started on that.
So we all have a voice, and our vote, no matter what you think, does impact. Yeah. Whatever the issue is that you're voting upon.
And we get a vote in every type of election.
Yeah, so you can say whatever you want, and everyone has the ability to impact whatever it is they're talking about,
mm-hmm.
based on, not just about, not impact by what they're saying, but actually legislatively impacted.
Well, that's my thing, right? So I totally agree that, on one hand, people should speak up, people should exercise their First Amendment right. But at the same time, especially if you're one of these people with the blue check mark, with a lot of followers, with, what we'll call a voice in 2017, at a certain point, if you keep saying the same thing and you're not really doing anything, or at least no one knows you're doing anything, it begins to ring hollow. You're just preaching to your choir. You're doing what Trump is doing to his supporters, You're talking to your own people. I feel like at a certain point, you have to demonstrate something more. I don't know. I feel like that's kind of the impasse we're getting to, is that the sort of the social justice corner of Twitter or the internet, it almost feels like an echo chamber.
That's why I'm kind of getting tired.
And by the way, that goes for every corner of politics. I don't mean to just single out those people. Conservatives are the same way. It's people that like to hear people agree with them, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's what it's come down to. I'm tired kind of hearing people say that they're trying to start a conversation about this or whatever.
Because
that's not even what it is anymore.
Let's start a conversation.
Well, has the conversation ever gotten us anywhere? Like,
well, I mean, it's like, yeah, let's start. Like, you don't think people have been talking? Like, and that's kind of where this all leads back to, right? The stick to sports thing is like, well, you've been in your bubble of sports your whole life, but there are people who actually live and breathe and talk about politics, and or don't even live and breathe, but are just aware, that have been for like forever.
Yeah.
You know, like, and now because you're talking about it, now we're opening up the conversation, you know? So, and again, in a vacuum, I don't want to belittle these people's efforts because it's important.
Mm.
Civic duty, civic engagement. I just wish what something people would do, for example, is like point people to good political media or good media covering politics, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, there's some podcasts I listen to, like, for example, The Politics Guys. I love that show because they have one conservative and one liberal talking every week, debating the issues of the day, and not just like, you know, the issues of like, oh, what Donald Trump said offensive, but they'll talk about policy, you know, the nitty gritty, because ultimately, after these disasters, after these catastrophes, after these tragedies, these mass shootings, everyone gives these sweeping, everyone has their solution, right? But you have to actually know the process. You have to actually know the limitations of what our political system can provide.
Right.
And so I think like for gun control, for example, this is if you actually get into how can we limit gun violence, right? Because a very high percentage of gun violence in the United States isn't even mass shootings, which is interesting because that's what a lot of people have you believe. It's suicides, right? Which is a whole problem in and of itself. But, I mean, really the only way we can truly, truly prevent, you know, shootings, mass shootings of any kind is an outright ban. And that's almost impossible politically.
Right.
Even the Democrats won't really touch it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they just started some committee for something that will never get anything done, you know? So it's... I don't know, man. Like, it's tough. Like, that's the thing with all this is, like, we all have these voices and we all have these, like, these good intentions, but where... That's the hardest thing in American politics right now in society is, what can I do?
Yeah.
What should I listen to?
Yeah, and...
First and foremost, like, who can I even trust?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a huge point.
I mean, you go on TV and there's just... I can't even watch the news.
Yeah.
Any outlet.
The thing with me, and for me, it's not to say that, like, having the conversation is bad. Like, it's good to have the conversation, yeah. But at some point, there needs to be a call to action of some kind.
Or just like, a more than a conversation, like a debate.
Yeah.
Like, just take a stance, you know?
Yeah.
Do something.
Which, again, is so hard to have because it circles back to people just staying in their echo chamber. And it's all...
Because no one wants to get disagreed with. Most people hate being disagreed with, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't love it, but I don't, like, you know, avoid it either.
Yeah, I mean, I hated being wrong about Mikhail Bodker. I didn't like it when you disagreed with me about that, but hey.
Yeah.
I was wrong.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, the political process is so murky. You know, like, I was involved in a campaign last fall and I got to see firsthand just how it's so nuts and bolts. Like, it's just knock on doors, make phone calls, and you're only bringing out the people who are going to vote for that person anyway.
Right.
You know, it's really hard.
Yeah.
So so circling back to the Golden Knights, I appreciate what they're doing, but it's maybe I'm just unsatisfied with the effectiveness.
What do we want to keep from that?
It's all fine.
It's fine.
Yeah, do we want to?
Yeah, it's fine.
I mean, I don't think I said anything crazy.
No, I don't. It's just, at what point are people going to just, you know, go?
Well, that's fine.
I'll see you in the next episode.
I mean, hey, you know, this is a fill-in episode.
Yeah, I mean, so Vegas do you see them sustaining?
Well, no, but...
they are 3-0.
No, but I think people will at least appreciate something a little different. You know? Something a little kind of cutting through the noise a little bit. Because I feel like I'm like the average person. Like, I wish I knew where to go, what to listen to, right? Mm. So, hopefully, people that are listening to this can at least relate, and with my great podcast recommendation, they can they can hopefully learn some things. Because I mean, that's what's fun is that when you actually kind of get into the flow of paying attention and, you know, pay attention to the right things, you actually learn a lot. So. Mm.
Yeah.
But you know, and we rarely get political on this podcast, and obviously with reason.
Right.
But you know, in this time, in like where sports is like almost completely politicized, I mean the president of the United States is talking about the NFL like every week, it seems.
Yeah.
So I feel like the GHP boys can chime in a little bit.
Yeah.
Right.
You did ask for both of our opinions about the stick to sports or whatever.
Yes.
And I didn't quite chime in on that. With that whole thing, I think very few, if any, athletes get into sports to become political figures or of any kind. So for me, they obviously have a unique platform.
Yeah.
Where they have powerful voices. Well,
they have so much attention. Yeah.
And so is it a shame if they don't take advantage of that? I'm not going to say it's a shame, but...
They're free citizens.
But yeah, but it is a great opportunity. But if they don't want to, I have no problem with them just playing the game and not trying to be a political figure. Like, Joel Ward, like, taking...
Tough position he was put in.
Put into a tough spot.
Yeah.
And, you know, having to basically make his decision, like, publicly, like, over a course of days, like, that's not an easy spot to be in.
Yeah.
I feel like that was really kind of unfairly placed on him. And I think he handled it as well as anyone possibly could.
Well, I mean, that's the great question with him, right? I mean, if we're going to stick to the NHL here, you know, what did he do that was so great? He basically said, I loved what he wrote.
Mm.
But people were talking about it like, oh, look at this great thing Joel Ward did. Well, he told you he wasn't going to really do anything outwardly, and like, if you pay attention, you might see him doing a couple things, right? And I trust that he'll do those things. He seems like a great guy. But I just feel like there were a lot of people of a particular affiliation, particular set of beliefs, who were very happy to see him say that.
Mm.
It's like, all right, you stayed in line, you know? Like, you didn't... Because if he had knelt, then it would have been, oh, he went about it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
How dare he, right? How dare he do anything? So when people saw, like, I just feel like a lot of people were appeased, you know, and I don't think it's a missed opportunity at all for him because, like, he did what was right for him.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not meant for this, like, it's a tough grind.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know how the hell, Colin Kaepernick was just not look at Twitter. I don't even know how the hell Colin Kaepernick goes out in public.
Yeah.
Think about it.
I don't know.
There's probably areas of this country that are dangerous for him to go out in.
Mm. Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It's... Like I said, it's a tough position
to be in. I give Joel Ward credit for is just doing what felt right to him.
Right.
You know, I don't think he faked the funk.
And you know? I like that.
T-shirts.
But also it feels like he did kind of refocus the conversation to get back to that buzzword.
Yeah. But yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah. You
know? I just applaud him for doing whatever he felt was right, and it did feel genuine.
Yeah.
And that's good. Just like with JT Brown, I feel like you could tell what he did, he like fully believed in it.
Mm.
So that's good. And I don't really think there are that many people faking it necessarily. I just think like that's definitely something to watch out for, is like who's actually doing this for the right reasons. So
yeah.
Mike Pence.
Oh God! talk about not doing it for the right reasons.
It's just one thing after another.
Yeah. Well, dude, a lot has happened since we've been recording podcasts.
I know.
So we have to talk.
I know. I'm telling you,
this is just going to be one long podcast. And if you make it this far or further, I mean, hey, you're a true fan.
We do promise there's hockey sprinkled in here. It is still a hockey podcast.
I mean, for Christ's sake, we're like four games into the season. Like, what do you want us to talk about here?
slashing.
Oh, actually, no. I have opinions on that.
Dude,
I'm very happy.
We haven't talked about it yet.
I'm very happy.
I am too.
I like power plays. People are like, oh, power plays are going to ruin the flow. Well, what's the flow? Dump and chase, change, dump and chase. You know, lost puck battle in the corner. Turnover. You know, it's like, what are we really interrupting here?
If you look at, you can look at two ways. One, for, you know, what it is, you know, assault, and two,
you're not supposed to be able to do that.
Yeah, like it's,
you can't do that.
It's against the rules. It's just refs never called it.
Yeah.
But if you,
well, supposedly it's a love tap.
Yeah, love hurts.
Ask Mark Mathot about love.
He'll give you the finger.
Oh my God!
If you look at
wonderful,
but not chat.
If you look at the lockout, the
0506.
Yeah. When it came back and they got rid of obstruction, and they also made it so that defensemen can no longer hold and grab players as they blow by them,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the defenseman, you know, did not have the ability to keep up with the forward, and adequately play his position. You had a lot of people who were on the way out of the NHL because of it.
Oh yeah, it happened fast.
Yeah, yeah. They weren't happy about the rule change. And the thing is, it made the game faster, and it made it, you know, more enjoyable. And it, you know, it wasn't the same as, you know, taking those, you know, bone crunching hits out of the game. It was you know, taking away something that slowed the game down, made it ugly, and. Yeah, I think the game is a better, there's a better product on the ice for it.
Well, I mean, let's talk about what the founders intended. Well, no, because, look, bone crunching hits are a great part of hockey. But in the very beginning of hockey, in the first games played, there weren't even boards. So you couldn't really hit people that hard anyway.
Is this when they were playing with piles of shit that were frozen?
frozen manure was one of the first puck.
Yeah.
But let's get back to the founders. Look. I sound like a Republican senator.
So my whole thing about the slashing, because everyone was so up in arms in the preseason because it was slowing down the flow, which I understand because no one wants that. But I do like the power plays. I like the offense. Look, it's not hard to figure out. You can't swing your stick. You can't even swing it a little tiny bit.
Yeah.
It's technically never been allowed by rule.
It's not a hockey
just,
play.
It's just been let go.
And I actually like the face-off rule, too.
I'm fine with it.
No, I'm absolutely fine.
I'm not mad.
I feel like just totally eye test, but I feel like it's leading to more clean wins.
Yeah.
So I like that. But, I mean, it's like you said, it's just like that was never allowed. And one thing that's interesting that I think Tyler Dello tweeted this, but 5-on-5 scoring has largely stayed the same over time, but it's just the power plays have disappeared.
Right.
We just need a baseline of power plays, you know, to keep this thing interesting. And look, the way I see it, and I've long maintained this, if you call the game tighter, like we're talking about here, eventually guys are going to lay off more and there's going to be more room.
Yes.
And then we won't need as many power plays because the game will just be more open and we'll have more goals.
Yeah.
So I just feel like it's a win-win.
Yeah. To all my friends, I think we need a bigger ice surface. No, just crack down on the penalties that are supposed to be called.
Oh, the bigger ice surface thing? People are still on that?
I mean,
well, the bigger goal people are, it's like flat earth.
Oh, we've got the Kyrie Irvings of the world chiming in on that.
I really don't want to see bigger goals.
I don't either. No.
I just feel like it's so unnecessary.
I don't want to see the dimensions changed at all.
It's like the desalinization plants.
Do we want to get into that?
Oh, God. No, but one thing I do, selfishly, what I like about power plays as like someone who writes about this sport and talks about it is that it's a lot easier to like, there's a lot more narrative that you can take from it, you know, like, oh, and not even just narrative, but just like, oh, like, how are they using these guys? How is this being set up? Who's in the second? Like, you know, like it's an easy kind of story to tell.
Right.
And I mean, I think fans in a way like it too, because it's just easier to like see. I think that's why football is so appealing for a lot of people, because it's so easy to see, okay, like, who's the guy that's getting the ball more? You know, how are they setting up their formation? And hockey doesn't really have that because it's a flow sport. And the power play is the only time where you can really tell what the tactics are.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm here for it.
No, I'm all about that. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I'm pretty shaken up about the fact that Pete DeBoer refuses to put Timo Meier on the second power play unit for the Sharks.
Is he on the first power play
unit? He's not on the power play.
Well, we're not sure if he's a good coach, so.
Like,
and by we, I'm not even sure who I'm speaking for.
No, I can agree with that.
Yeah.
Timo Meier was one of the few Sharks.
Well, he was great in the AHL.
He was.
And like, I mean, Pete DeBoer doesn't have to walk very far to ask
Roy Sommer.
To ask Roy Sommer how good Timo Meier was in the AHL. So he doesn't really have any excuses there.
My thing is, Timo Meier, he's 21, skilled offensively, high round, like ninth overall pick in the 2015 draft. And like, the skill is there, and the Sharks need help on the power play.
You could have stopped that help.
Yeah. they need help. Just help. Help wanted.
Gemma Leifler pendant.
They're hiring.
They've fallen and they might get up.
Yeah. Well, let's hope.
Nah, I mean, we might be a little hard on them, but yeah.
But like, the point being, and he was also one of the few, like good possession players for the Sharks in their last game against LA.
Well, yeah, because he totally fits... He totally fits the profile of a good possession player. This is going off the rails.
Keep recording.
Yeah.
Keep talking.
He was one of the...
We'll do it live.
He was one of the few very good possession players for the Sharks in their last game. And I feel like they just need to take advantage of that. And I feel like it's not rocket science to say that. Look, their power play, even though it scored a couple goals in the first game, didn't look that good. They scored a goal on the rush. And then Couture banked in a pass
from behind the goal line.
Couture's playing.
Yes.
Oh.
He is playing. Okay. Yeah.
Just checking.
I see what you did there.
Well, I mean, is his face, like, there?
It's healthy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. All his teeth are
Hey, good for him.
Intact. Are the same.
He needs them all.
So, look, just put Timo on the power play. That's all I'm saying. Like,
hey, you could use your voice for change. Hashtag free Timo.
What if I start like a GoFundMe to get Timo on the power play?
People start telling you to stick to sports because they won't know who Timo is.
But fun fact, my fantasy team name, Finding Timo.
I like that. Hey, you guys are playing fantasy hockey this year.
We are, and we try to get you in.
My hat's off to you, because no, not me.
So like, I'm a little upset. Like, you didn't play fantasy hockey with us. You made false promises about fantasy football. Well,
okay, fantasy football, I got screwed.
What happened?
By the man.
Explain yourself.
By the man.
Explain yourself.
Well, I went to log in to the draft 25 minutes before the draft.
Even though you had a week to sign up.
And they wouldn't let me, so
yeah.
What can you say?
But then there was your league.
Hey, what can you say?
There was John Forslund. Oh my God, he's here. But then you were saying also that this is completely non-interesting to anyone else.
No, yeah, but this is fine. It's our podcast at the end of the day. We, like, I mean, no one's making us do anything.
Yeah. We make the rules.
Yeah.
But you said, because the last time you came back to visit, you said, hey, man, we've got this fantasy league. You're down. And I was like, yeah, I am down. And then we never heard from you again.
Yeah, well, it was because, like, we weren't sure who was going to join the league, and then the guys that they were waiting on finally came through, and then they were like, well, we want to keep it to, like, the people kind of in this little circle. So, mm-hmm. Look, I tried.
Wow. Exclusionary.
Yeah. I know. Exclusive. Very, very, where we built a wall, so to speak.
it's a great big wall. Just the biggest,
beautiful wall.
Sturdiest wall.
Okay. Well, how long are we into this?
It's like, roughly 50 minutes.
Oh.
With like 10 minutes of hockey.
Okay, well, do you guys want to finish on some hockey?
Let's talk about some hockey.
I feel like we've talked about important things.
Do you want to talk about the Dallas Stars?
They look good.
Do they?
Yes. Dude, look at the stats. Look at the stats, bro.
They are 1-2.
Yeah, but like, are you... The Devils are 3-0.
Yeah, I know.
Why does that apply to
seven,
them?
Seven goals for, eight goals against.
That first game that you and I watched was... It looked exactly the way I thought it was going to look. So Dallas played against Vegas in the first game, I believe.
I mean, and Vegas just is mucking it up.
Well, for me, Dallas looked like... It looked like what happens when you have a highly offensive team meet Ken Hitchcock. It looked confused.
Yeah, but that was game one.
I know.
Look,
I don't mean to draw any like premature conclusions. Yeah. I'm still optimistic about Dallas.
Well, I mean, look, I know you're going to cringe when I say this.
I don't think I will.
But Dallas is the fourth highest shot attempt plus minus of any team right now.
Really?
So
does that mean something?
The teams, well, right now it might not, but I them being up there along with Toronto, Carolina, Boston, Columbus, Montreal, Edmonton, like that feels like a, you know, maybe not that high, but it does feel like these are the teams you'd expect to be somewhere above 15.
Right. And they are showing signs of life. Like Tyler Seguin had that knuckle puck bar down goal, and Jamie Benn is, you know, getting his points.
Montreal has the most shot attempts of any team in the league.
And when I said, does that mean something? I wasn't trying to put you back on your heels. I literally don't know what that is.
Well, basically, they've just had the, in the games they've played, they've just put more pucks in the end of their team the most consistently.
It's literally shot attempt
and
differential.
Okay. Yeah, like, it's just literally shot attempts. It's just plus minus, but for shot attempts. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought, you know, goals might be in there somewhere. I couldn't figure out.
Yeah, so, like, if you go by shot attempt plus minus, which is kind of unfair to teams who have only played, like, two games. So, I mean, I wish there was a way to, like, prorate this. But they're, like, so the Habs are number one. This is crazy. The Habs are number one at plus 71 shot attempts.
Wow.
The Florida Panthers are number two at two games played. The Habs have played four games, and the Panthers have played two games.
Yeah.
And the Panthers are number two in the league at plus 46. So that's kind of crazy. Edmonton is number three at plus 43. Dallas is number four at plus 36.
Okay.
So, I mean, like, I'm, like, I think the way I'm approaching the early season is, like, I take note of teams like the Devils who are showing flashes of skill, but for a team like the Canadiens, for example, I'm not so much worried about what they look like in weeks one, two, three of the season. I'm looking more for, like, the underlying trends.
Right? Mm-hmm.
So, although, like, and that's actually been the poison for the Habs in recent years, is that they get off to these very hot starts, although they're not necessarily playing the best hockey. They're just, you know, Carey Price is stopping everything, the puck's going in at a crazy rate on the power play or whatever, and they start 9-1, and everyone thinks they're going to the Cup, and then...
Yep.
And then the rest of the season happens. But now they're starting off kind of so-so. But if you watch them play, I mean, they've just ran into some really hot goaltenders.
Yeah.
So I prefer it that way. It's like they're going to sort it out, but they're playing well.
Yeah. I mean, so, Drouin alone had, I think, six shots on goal
yesterday. On one shift, they had that line had like five shots on goal.
Yeah, they absolutely spouted off. And
they should have destroyed the Hawks, but they didn't.
Well, the Canadians right now, I think, are shooting like a 2.5% shooting percentage.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to bounce back.
Yeah.
Right? If they just keep playing this way, and they're going to get David Schlemko back, which is going to help.
Wait, he's hurt?
Oh, yeah, he hasn't touched the ice yet.
He hasn't played yet.
Oh. Yeah.
That's been a big problem for the Canadians is the third pairing. Because the first pairing of Weber and 19-year-old Victor Mete. If this is the first time you've heard about him, then...
take a drink.
You were only 2 weeks removed from what I first heard about him. But he's...
You can be an expert, too.
But he's looked good. He's looked good next to Weber, and, you know, I kind of think that with a guy like Shea Weber, I've really come around to Shea Weber. I think he's a good player. I think he's actually a great defenseman. Obviously has his limitations. Isn't like, he's never going to be an Erik Karlsson, Drew Doughty, Subban, whatever, but he is, in my mind, a first pairing defenseman. Just...
It depends on who you pair him with.
Depends on who you pair him with. He's not like a... I guess in fantasy football, the term would be like matchup proof.
Right.
He's not that kind of guy, but he's a first pairing guy. He can handle that load. And I think they shouldn't stress so much about who they put with him, because they've tried like three different guys already. But Victor Mete has looked good. He's a smaller defenseman, moves his feet real well, moves the puck. Doesn't really, he's just not afraid. Like the way he plays, he just like he shakes off forecheckers, looks people off in the neutral zone, just a solid player. The second pairing, again, it's one of those things where it's like you don't really have to worry too much about who you put with Jeff Petrie, but Carl Alzner, man, he...
Oh.
Not impressed.
Shades of Kevin Bieksa. Honestly, he looks horrible. I watch Carl Alzner play, and I'm really trying to figure out what he's getting paid to do.
I mean, a lot...
Leader grit?
A lot of it is reputation-based, I feel like.
But he's not even that old. Is he even 32?
He's been around for a long time.
Well, hold on. I need us to check this.
Yeah, we'll get our statisticians.
How old is Carl Alzner?
Does anyone want to guess right now?
I think he's 31.
I guess 29.
I'll split the difference.
I'm hoping 31.
I'll say 30. I'm going to split the difference here.
I'm just hoping for his oldest. 29. No.
Oh, yes.
No. He just turned 29.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck.
No.
Oh,
no.
I am one with the Force, and the Force is with me.
How does he look so slow? He's only 5 years older than me.
Oh, my God.
God. That's brutal, bud.
So I haven't had
I mean, he's in the AHL, so hats off to him. But, God, man.
Yeah. So I was actually meaning to take a look at this
because that made me sad.
I've been meaning to take a look at this because I've seen you tweeting about him. Is he like getting caved in?
No, he just looks like I'm just watch. I don't even. It's funny because with the Ducks, I look at the stats so heavily, but with the Canadians, I don't really look at the stats that much. I just watch them play, and I can just guess the stats by looking at them, and I'm usually right somehow. Yeah.
Hey, I mean, it's a gift. Whatever.
It's a gift. But he just looks brutal. Like he looks slow. He doesn't make the right decisions with the puck.
Who's he paired with?
So he's been with Petrie a lot.
Okay.
And then the third pairing has been. It's been a hodgepodge, but Jordy Benn, a guy who I was really high on last season after he got traded over to the Canadians, just hasn't... He's looked shaky. He's looked really shaky.
Yeah.
And then they've tried Brandon Davidson, who is actually starting to look pretty good. Surprise, surprise. Mobile, can move the puck. It's just one of those guys where if he makes a turnover, it's like the end of the world because he doesn't really hit people that hard.
Mm.
Mark Streit, I think he's looked good. But the thing is, with David Schlemko coming back, obviously, there's a maximum size to your roster, and not all those guys are two-way contract guys. I don't think any of them are, actually.
Uh-oh.
So someone's...
Got to go.
Someone's going
to
get traded. So, yeah. But look, if they can...
With his history, it's probably going to be Schlemko.
No. I don't know. Schlemko's not getting traded. I think it's probably going to be Streit.
If they can.
Yeah, who's going to take him?
Someone.
Someone is going to get injured enough. Like
the Anaheim Ducks are pretty beat up right now. But I think they're pretty loyal to Corbin and
Holzer. Was he with Pittsburgh at one point?
Yeah.
He didn't play. He won a Stanley Cup.
They'll probably take him back.
Officially, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
The Habs are in a weird spot because, I mean, the guy that should go is Carl Alzner, but they just signed him to a 5-year, $20-something million deal.
Doesn't it feel like that was a foregone conclusion? Like
that they were going to like mess up in free agency?
That someone was going to give Alzner.
Yeah, but why did it have to be the Canadians? Like, I mean, like of all teams that like that they have such a log
jam. There's 30 other teams.
The worst part about the Canadians blue line is that although I like this group, I'm weirdly optimistic about this team in so many regards, but the blue line is definitely the test of that, and I think it. Look, it's obviously not an elite unit, but if you have a guy like Shea Weber, who's clearly the first-pairing guy, everything else will follow suit, and I think they have the guys to do that.
Mm.
But with Alzner, he's holding back so many guys. Because if he wasn't there, then none of this would be a problem.
Right.
So, and then the other problem is that they don't really have anyone in the minors who's just ready to step up because they traded that guy, Mikhail Sergachev, for Jonathan Drouin. So now they're totally locked into this group.
Right. It's going to look a lot better when Schlemko comes back, I promise.
Well, I'm excited to see him play because they badly need someone who can move the puck.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even funny.
Yeah. It's going to happen. Like,
hey, I'm praying for it.
It sounds like he's nearing a return. I think I saw that
I think he's going to be back within the week.
Yeah.
But it's...
I hope so. All these Canadians games have been on national TV, and I'm trying to tune in to see my boy.
Galchenyuk might be on his way out.
I mean, he should be. He should have been out a couple years ago.
He's on the fourth line now.
Well, he's been on the third line.
Yeah.
He got bumped to the fourth line today.
Well, the thing is, so him... The Canadiens lineup has actually been really fun because the first line has been Pacioretty, Drouin, Gallagher. Great first line. And then you have Hudon, Plekanec, and Lehkonen, which is another great line. And then you've had, Byron, Dano, and Galchenyuk.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the fourth line of Delarose, Mitchell, all these forgettable guys. But I think Galchenyuk just doesn't really fit on a line that's so like north south, you know, because Dano to me is a great like third line center.
Mm.
You know, like he's never going to be the flashiest, but he's just one of those guys who's good at grinding it out. And then obviously Paul Byron, but I just for whatever reason I just feel like Galchenyuk doesn't fit with those guys. Like he needs to be surrounded by weapons. You know, he's kind of he has to have someone to pass it to.
I was watching the Habs game yesterday. Who was it against? I'm trying to remember.
Chicago.
Against Chicago. And I totally saw what you were saying, I think, last season, where I think Galchenyuk would really benefit from playing center for a lot of reasons, but one is he has both sides of the ice to work with.
Yeah.
Because he got the puck on the rush so many times on the left wing, and he can really only go one way with it.
Exactly. And it really limits him. And, and he can do so much with both sides of the ice. So my hope is that, well, my hope is that he just, like, he's going to have to play his way out of this. He's going to have to put up some points, you know, not turn the puck over, prove to the coaching staff that he's legit. And I think he can still win their trust. You know, I don't think this is a situation that's necessarily over, and they need him.
They do.
They need a guy who can be the spark plug offensively. Oh, and I forgot Andrew Shaw in that mix, in the top, the top nine.
That's understandable.
Well, he's, you know, Andrew Shaw, for as much of a pest as he is, he's actually a good hockey player. Like, he's a very good possession guy, and he can, like, chip in every now and then.
I'll begrudgingly give him that.
Yeah, like, he's not bad. It's just he's so hateable.
Yes.
So, but there are a lot of things about the Canadians that I like, and I think that if they can just portion their lines better, you know, I think that now they have Lekkonen on the first line with Drouin and Pacioretty. I think Lekkonen is going to, by the end of the year, he's going to be, well, I don't want to say he's going to be a household name. But he's going to, like, a lot of people are going to know who he is. Yeah. I'm so impressed by this guy. Like, he's just so savvy. Just, like, he just, you know those guys you watch play? It can be in any league, and it just feels like they never make a bad play. Like, he's one of those guys.
Yeah. Oh, I love those guys.
Yeah. And, you know, not necessarily prolific, not, like, your star-type player, but they just never seem to make a mistake. He's like, maybe 5'11".
Yeah.
And he's just, oh, I love Arturi Lekkonen.
Do you like what they're doing with him on the power play?
Shades of Saku Koivu.
Yes.
Finn, former Finn, or fellow Finn.
Former Finn.
Former Finn. Well, I think Saku Koivu might have a dual citizenship, but fellow Finn.
Yes. Do you like what they're doing with Lekkonen on the power play?
So that's another thing. So the Montreal power play has been a point of consternation going into the season, because it's one of the... So basically the way NHL power plays work now, it's like the NBA. You have the teams that don't shoot threes and the teams that do shoot threes, and then the Warriors. and... With the NHL, the teams that shoot a lot from the point, you would think, oh, those are the teams that shoot threes, right? But those are actually the worst shots on the ice. So the teams now that have the most success are the teams that employ what we would call a 1-3-1. So you have one guy at the top. You have a bumper in the middle. They call him a bumper because he's surrounded by opposing penalty killers, but he gets the puck and bumps it back out to someone.
Like a quick one
or
touch pass.
Or he spins around, shoots it.
You have to guard him.
Yes. And then you have your two guys at the face-off circles and then a guy along the goal line on either side.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, under Michel Therrien, the Canadiens were one of those teams that did not use the 1-3-1 at all. They had two D-men at the top. And this is another thing. So most teams in the league now have gone to four forwards, one D.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not aware of this because I'm a Habs fan. Like, I read this article by Tyler Dello on The Athletic thinking, like I read that. I was like, oh, really? I was not aware of this, and I feel like I follow hockey, you know,
a little bit.
So now the Canadians are definitely trying this setup, and I would say you see the potential, but it's not there yet. So you have Shea Weber at the top, right, and then you have Jonathan Drouin on the left boards, and that's his wheelhouse right there, because he can make tight turns, he can spin, he can make nice passes across. Just a smart... He's kind of quarterbacking it, a bit like Joe Thornton in a way.
Mm. Oh, it totally runs for Drouin, for sure.
Obviously not Joe Thornton-like, but it is the same kind of setup.
The role.
In the beginning, so they have Pacioretty in the right faceoff dot, which, you know, is where everyone has wanted him to be, but where he's even admitted in interviews, like, I'm just not comfortable taking that shot. Well, look, Max, you can do it.
Yeah.
just give it a try. I promise.
Why wouldn't he want to take that shot?
But Max Pacioretty, if you read interviews, if you kind of hear stuff, like he's kind of an eccentric guy. Yeah. And then you have Gallagher at the goal line.
Naturally.
For obvious reasons. And then they've had Galchenyuk in the bumper role, which I've found kind of odd, because we've seen him be great in that right faceoff circle as just like a finisher. Or just, you know, a guy who can get the puck on his stick.
Even from the right...
Fake in and out, make a pass back across.
Even from the right corner, he can snipe.
Yes. So, it's been an awkward fit, and as of today, or I guess Wednesday, they swapped Arturi Lekkonen into that role, which I think makes a lot more sense,
mm-hmm.
because he's more suited for that. And now they have Galchenyuk on the second unit in his correct spot. So we'll see if it bears fruit. But at least the Canadians are moving into 2017,
right?
You know, as a power play. And it's funny because now, after kind of reading these articles, seeing the Canadians do it, I'm a lot more cognizant of, you know, what a power play should look like in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we just know, like, if you're taking all your shots from the point, you're going to score less.
Right.
And this kind of ties back to the Sharks.
Yes. Oh, I know.
And Brent Burns. And it's not just, like, it's the percentage of the shots, it's the location. And there's a lot of teams doing it wrong. Right. But I've been watching the Ducks, and the Ducks are interesting because the Ducks, what they do is a lot of the time they'll start in a traditional sort of like two guys at the point, but they'll shift over into the 1-3-1, you know, or like they'll have two guys on their they won't be on their off wing. So let's say you have a right-handed D on the right side of the ice and a left-handed D on the left side of the ice, and then they'll do that switch thing at the point
right up top.
But it's like, Maybe that throws the penalty killers off for a second, but you know, you're wasting time. You have 2 minutes,
right?
Just start in the most efficient way possible, and then go.
Right. Yeah. So like, are they trying to get the PK out of position, or is it just a timing thing where they're trying to set up the one timer and they're hoping that they cause some misdirection?
Sounds like they're anticipating losing the faceoff and trying to keep the puck on the boards.
Which is weird because it's the Ducks who are like the faceoff team.
Yeah.
You know? But what I love about Claude Julien coming back to the Habs so far and, you know, talking about this whole power play thing is that he seems to trust whatever decision he makes. He doesn't change his lines on a whim. The power play essentially looks the same formation-wise since game one, since the preseason. So you feel a confidence in his decision-making that you just didn't feel from Michel Therrien. Michel Therrien would switch everything every game. And, like, I feel like that sends a weird message to the players as well. You know, like, if you're a guy on the bench and your coach is changing your line halfway through the first period, it's like, well, you know, how are we ever going to form any chemistry?
Right.
You know? Like, you can say whatever you will about chemistry statistically, but in the players' minds, it does matter.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so, because if you're sitting on the bench and, you know, maybe you have a couple bad shifts, you know, it's just not going the way you want it to go, but you feel like you're still clicking with your line mates.
Like, we're just like a couple plays away.
Yeah. You know? Let it develop.
Yeah.
You know, it will bear fruit at some point down the line.
Yes.
And that's what the regular season is for.
Exactly. And so that's why I like this iteration of the Canadians in terms of the coaching staff, in terms of the roster, because I feel like they're going to play this thing the right way. At least that's my hope. You know, I mean, if they trade Galchenyuk, you know, I'm almost at the point now with the Galchenyuk thing where I love Alex Galchenyuk, but it may just never happen for him with the Canadians. Like, it might just not, you know?
Mm.
And at a certain point, it's like, I would rather have a guy who's actually going to be used in his like, look at Jonathan Drouin. What has he done in his NHL career to deserve being a first-line center? I mean, Galchenyuk's been in the league longer, and he's been more productive.
Mm.
So, you know, it just goes to show that if you can just get a guy who's at least going to be put in a position to succeed, that's what you want. I feel like with Galchenyuk right now, it's just like a waste of talent.
It's too bad Galchenyuk isn't a defenseman, because then they could trade him for Duchesne.
Well, they're kicking tires.
They should. They absolutely should.
But should... Oh, I'm glad you bring up the Avalanche, because I wanted to talk about them.
Yes.
So Sven Andrighetto,
former Canadian,
who the Canadians traded, has 20 points in 23 games since being traded.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Forming a very potent line with, I think, Nathan MacKinnon and... Shoot. Forget the other guy. But the top six for the Avalanche has been very, very good.
Mika Rantanen.
Rantanen.
Nice.
I love that guy.
And then there's the Duchesne Yakupov-Kerfoot line.
Yakupov at 2 points today.
I'm so here for the Nail Yakupov revival story. No, dude. I mean, I'm serious. Like, it's such a good story.
Dude, their first album was fire.
Hey, listen up. Remember when you said you posed the question on the podcast last year, is it too late for Nail Yakupov to become a thing? And I said, no, it is not too late.
Oh, okay.
My God.
I said the light was really dim.
But
it's always darkest before the dawn.
I tweeted earlier today about how good Matt Duchesne has been for the Avs this year. I mean, if you look at his numbers, mm-hmm. he's been outstanding, and he's on a line. He's on a great line.
Yeah.
I just feel like at this point, you know, I feel like they have to ask themselves, so why do we want to trade him again?
Yeah.
Because we made this thing so goddamn awkward.
Toxic. Yeah.
You know, but it's like, look, winning cures all, and this team is flying high, and I kind of want to see it through now. You know, like, yeah. I want to see Matt Duchene be a Colorado Avalanche. I don't want to see him on another team. I don't.
Yeah.
He looks good in that jersey.
Yeah. I mean, he grew up a fan of the Avalanche.
Oh, that's the worst part. You hear what Peter Forsberg said about him?
Yeah, that was cringy.
That's brutal. And I love Peter Forsberg.
Well, Peter Forsberg has to, like, he's got to understand the business better than that, right? But they can't sit him if they need to showcase him if they want to trade him.
But, you know, you got to understand, Peter Forsberg is probably very close to Joe Sakic. But I think Peter Forsberg...
He's also close to Matt Duchene.
I didn't hear what he said. I didn't actually hear it. I read what he said. And I can't imagine him saying it in a tone that would be, like, disagreeable.
Right.
Peter Forsberg is, like, one of the nicest guys.
Right.
Just, you know, outwardly at least.
Yeah. I don't think he meant it personally at Matt Duchene, but when you just read the words on paper, yeah. It looks pretty harsh.
Peter Forsberg, one of the all-time underrated players in NHL history.
Yeah, it's too bad
he didn't. It's funny because I think his modern day, well, it's kind of weird to say modern day, but I think Sidney Crosby and Peter Forsberg are like the same player.
Mm.
Very similar players.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
Just very strong, skilled, play below the goal line, play along the wall, can also create an open ice.
Yeah, great hands.
Slick hands, hard shot. I don't know. Like, I see a lot of similarities between those guys.
Yeah. I still have nightmares about when the Sharks used to go up against him in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And it was just, they would put Scott Hanen on him, and Scott Hanen kind of became the Minister of Defense, but it still wasn't enough.
Well, Peter Forsberg, the creator of my favorite shootout move.
The one-handed?
A lot of people's favorite shootout move.
What was that shootout move called again?
The Forsberg. Oh.
Oh.
The Forsbergian.
Yeah. It's just too bad he didn't play more games. What did he play, like 800 something?
Yeah, he didn't. I mean, he got to that point late in his career where he had to have like electro something, like he had to have like sparks in his skates activate the nerves in that like destroyed ankle or whatever.
Oh my god!
Like it was that bad. Like Bauer made him a custom skate. I'm not making this up.
Wow, it's like jump-starting a car.
Joe's looking at me like I'm crazy.
No.
But I'm not making this up.
No, I'm not looking at you like you're crazy. I'm looking at the 50s like they were crazy with electroshock therapy.
Yeah. Well, lobotomy.
Dude. So you're high on the Avs?
Okay, so
they did real well against Boston, who we had as being bad.
You know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say that I'm like, and I said before, like I said this an hour and a half ago, I'm higher on the Avs than I am the New Jersey Devils because Eric Johnson and Tyson Barrie would both be the best defensemen on that team.
Yes.
Obviously, I'd rather have Corey Schneider in net, but I just, you know, these Nathan MacKinnon, Gabe Landeskog, who everyone's forgotten, Matt Duchene, hell, even Neil Yakupov, Mikko Rantanen. Maybe not as much, but these are NHL players.
Yeah.
The New Jersey Devils, there's a lot of green on that lineup.
Yeah.
You know?
And I do agree that I'd rather have Corey Schneider, but in fairness to Varlamov, he's playing really well.
Exactly. And, you know, if he gets one of these streaks and the team's going well. And look, let's not forget year two of Jared Bednar.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have a training camp. I mean, he had a training camp, but he came in so late.
Yeah.
You know? He didn't really get a chance to set everything up properly. At least that was his excuse. Was a great coach in the AHL, so I'm gonna give him, I'm gonna give him some sort of leeway here. Yeah. And I mean, what's his name? Scott Hines, for the Devils, another good young coach. So that's what's fun about both
John
these
Hines.
John Hines. Yes, John Hines. What's fun about both these teams is that they're led by young players. They play a fun style and young coaches.
Mm.
You know, like that's. To me, that's always a good story.
Yeah.
And I hope it continues because, look, what's fun about the NHL and what I've kind of come to appreciate as the years have gone on is that anyone can come up and surprise, you know? And every year it's a different team.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully this year it's not the Senators again.
I would rather see a team with McKinnon and Duchesne in the playoffs.
The Senators, the Senators look terrible.
As much fun as the Senators were last year.
It's like, wow, without Erik Karlsson, we're just the Senators.
They are in trouble without him.
Yeah. Oh, another team. So another team two teams I really liked, have really liked so far. I mean, obviously the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yes.
Look like they could do a lot of damage this year.
Uh-huh.
But two teams that I've really liked watching, because I've tried to watch as many teams as I can in the early going.
Same.
Carolina Hurricanes, man, they play with a lot of pace. That team plays fast.
Sebastian Aho, my dude.
I love watching Sebastian Aho.
My boy, Noah Hanifin.
Actually, him and Arturi Lehkonen kind of play similar styles.
Mm.
But yeah, that team. Well, it's funny you bring up Noah Hanifin because supposedly he's really good, but like, if he's really good, then I don't know what that makes Jacob Slavin, because he looks really good out there too.
Yeah.
You know? And then obviously Justin Falk. But they're a really fun team to watch because, like, they just play so fast. Like, yeah. I didn't really realize, because, you know, I watch the Ducks a lot. I watch the Habs a lot. And these teams are not known for their pace of play. But the Hurricanes play, I mean, they're skilled. They play the right way.
Mm.
You know, like, it's just, they're fun to watch, man.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like they're playing to their strengths now, because Jeff Skinner is a speedy guy, great skater. And then, I mean,
And Scott Darling has looked great.
Scott Darling has played well. And then, I mean, like, look at the skill up and down this lineup. Aho, Teräväinen. I mean, Jordan Staal's still not a bad player.
They just, I mean, like, the only critique of them, and I feel like this speaks volumes, you know, of where they're at, is that they just don't have a star.
Yeah. Right.
And it's like, sure, they probably don't. I don't really know who you would describe as a star on that lineup.
Skinner, mostly.
Skinner.
Yeah. You know, it's...
Yeah.
He's the guy who's done it. But they're going to be fun to watch, and I really hope to make the playoffs, just because I want to see that team
mm-hmm.
more.
Yeah.
You know, I just want more of them.
I do, too.
Another team that I've kind of almost begrudgingly enjoyed watching, the New York Islanders.
Really?
Dude, just watching Jordan Eberle and John Tavares play on the same line, it's like watching summer pickup with these guys. Like, they just... Because Jordan Eberle, I mean, like, he's a really good player, man. He should have probably scored, like, close to 30 goals last year if the puck had just bounced his way.
Yeah.
And seeing him now with John Tavares, who is... I feel like John Tavares is one of the most respected guys in the NHL, you know, because mm-hmm. you hear guys talk about him and his dedication in the offseason. And, you know, obviously both two Team Canada guys played together, you know, the World Juniors. There's that instant chemistry there, and you saw it early on. So I just for those two alone, I'm watching the Islanders this season. And obviously the rest of the team, I mean, you know, Beauvillier, Barzal, Josh Hosang. I mean, these are exciting players, you know, so I got to see the Islanders again tonight against the Ducks, and just a really fun team.
Yeah.
You know, I like, that's what's fun about the NHL this year, is that there's not really one team that you're like, man, this thing is just cooked.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's just no reason to watch this team. Even the Arizona Coyotes, you know, who were almost writing off a little bit, like, they still have some guys who it's like, okay, well, at least you get to see their progression.
Yeah. Yeah. I still want to see Clayton Keller and Max Domi. Like, these are...
Yeah.
These
are not... And Dylan Strome. Will he ever do anything?
Yeah.
We'll see.
I mean, these are not... These aren't bad players, like, and Buffalo too. Like, Buffalo's
another one, because I saw Buffalo Islanders. I watched that game.
Yeah,
yeah.
Your takeaways?
Well, Jack Eichel's a monster.
He's a beast.
Yeah,
he's a monster beast.
And Evander Kane looks motivated. We'll see if he
stays healthy.
Yes, that's the big thing. I think Robin Leonard's going to be great. That blue line is improved. I'm optimistic on Buffalo. I just think there might be too many teams ahead of them.
Yeah, as long as Robin Leonard doesn't get forced to make 40 saves a game, which so far he's having to do.
Yeah, but just watching Jack Eichel is a treat.
He's so good.
Yeah.
That pass, God, I can't get over that pass that he had.
That sauce.
In game one, that sauce over the skate under the stick.
I've forgotten about it.
You know what? You're a man that doesn't live in the past. And
full disclosure, Jack Eichel is on Nick's fantasy team.
He is on my fantasy team.
What about the Jets? Any concerns there?
Back to the start of this podcast, that might be where we see our first coach firing.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. I was actually thinking about that today when I was thinking what are we going to have on this podcast. I was like, when it comes to the coaches, Paul Maurice, man, if he doesn't figure that thing out,
Mm-hmm. Because
they should fire him. It's not even a question of like, will he? They should.
Yeah, they should not have
re-upped him. The only reason why they won't is because they just re-signed him this offseason.
They just re-upped him for whatever
weird, bizarre reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But let me look at the list here of coaches that might get fired. Ted McClellan's safe. Ken Hitchcock just hired. Mike Babcock there. Yeah, I mean, there's not that many coaches who... Doug Waite, you know, fresh voice there with the Islanders. Tortorella.
Mucking up in preseason.
for Winnipeg.
Phil Housley with Buffalo. I mean, you know, there's a lot of new... Soon. Yeah, Oh, okay, so I guess the two coaches that I can legitimately see getting fired early on... Legitimately. I mean, it's really just two guys. Alain Vigneault and Paul Maurice.
Mm.
That's about it.
What if Minnesota doesn't do anything?
But it's year two. I mean, I don't know.
But they're sort of in win-now mode.
They are, but I...
If they get off to, like...
They'd have to be really bad.
They would have to go, like, 0-8.
I just feel like year two, Bruce Boudreau, such an exciting... Because I don't really think anyone expected them to be that good this season. So I feel like that bottom a few months...
Yeah.
Bruce Boudreau is always one of those guys who's on the hot seat.
And then for Winnipeg, again, not to oversimplify this, but Steve Mason isn't very good.
But also with the Hurricanes, I mean, how long can they just be the exciting team that doesn't win?
Right. I mean...
Does Bill Peters just... I mean, at what point is it like, all right, well, we need more.
Right.
But the thing is, who do you hire? Who's out there?
Yeah.
Daryl Sutter? You know, I mean...
if he wants to come off the farm.
Yeah. Yeah, drinking wine with Glenn Hall.
Yeah.
I love that picture.
I haven't seen that
Legends.
Picture. Oh, Daryl Sutter does his best to try and smile.
Is it an old photo or a new one?
No, just recently.
Just recently.
Oh, really? Oh, well, I'll have to check that out. But
well, I think Lindy Ruff is an assistant. I saw him on the bench the other day with someone.
You know what? There are some really high-profile former head coaches that are assistants right now. I can't remember if he's one of them.
Okay, I think he is. Really? Yeah, I think he is. I could have sworn I saw him.
Assistant coach, New York Rangers.
Ah.
There it is. But yeah, I really can't see anyone else getting fired. I mean, Tom Rowe is still with the Panthers, as far as I'm concerned.
I'll go with that.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I mean, Bruce Boudreau is always a favorite. Dave Tippett's out there.
So we don't have to worry. Oh, that is a great picture. Oh, wow.
Yeah. No, it's fantastic. Glenn Hall, man, 502 consecutive games played as a goaltender.
Wow, that means he threw up 502 consecutive times.
In that era where there were no masks.
No masks.
And no suitable padding.
How do you even, like...
Maybe bear trots.
Do you think, like, they would have to... I mean...
Mid-season. I just feel like the bar has been lowered for them. And now Ovechkin.
Ovechkin, you know, he's...
Is he at 8 goals now?
Yeah, he scored today.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it, by the way.
CCM Ovi is back.
I love it.
Who knew that all the magic was in the brand?
60 and 39.
All right. Well, what are we at? 2 hours, probably?
Yeah, something like... Yeah.
Hey.
So, you know what?
If you missed us... Then you'll love this podcast.
Yes.
If you didn't miss us, then I'm not even sorry. I didn't force you to do this.
This might be the Garage Hockey Filibuster podcast.
This was fun because you know this is early season, just talking about the league.
These are the kind of podcasts that I really enjoy because it kind of gets back to the reason why we started it, which was to just record our normal hockey.
I mean, honestly, like, we're recording right now, but I don't really feel like we're doing a podcast.
Yeah, no, I don't either.
So that's isn't that nice?
It's you know what? It's such a fun, free-flowing situation that we've created.
Oh, yeah, boys.
And I'm all about it, boys.
Are we talking about the Carolina Hurricanes? We're free-flowing, and we're not sure where we are in the standings, so there we go.
This is true. So
okay, so to wrap this up, teams I'm worried about, I don't even know if this is even fair, but Arizona just, like, this was supposed to be the year of the jump.
Right.
And they look just as terrible.
I'm worried about Arizona, Minnesota, and Winnipeg.
Winnie.
Yeah.
I'm worried about Patrick Laine.
Well, no.
But I'm worried about that team, yeah.
So, yeah,
Dustin Byfuglien might be, like, cooked.
He might be. I'm not even worried about, like, the top-end talent, because, like...
And then Steve Mason.
Mark Scheifele's off to a good start. Hella Book turned in a good game the other day, but I always worry about Steve Mason. I actually don't worry about him. I don't think he's
good.
Yeah,
like you just know he's
yeah.
He is what he is.
Yeah, exactly.
Joe, team you're worried about?
Probably Nashville.
I don't think Lavi's in trouble, but I mean after this season we'll see. I mean the thing is they're beat up because I mean Ryan Ellis,
yeah,
him being out, he might be their best D-man for all we know.
He might be.
That's the thing with that team is like no one actually really knows who the best guy is back there. To me, it's between Subban and Ellis.
I would file that under good problems.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. But at the same time, I mean, you know, Yossi might just be a PP specialist. Ekholm's definitely just like a defensive guy. PP never sounds good in person.
I'm very ashamed of myself for laughing at that.
PP, yeah.
I felt like I was flying for a second.
But I mean, if you have Nick Bonino as your second line center, you might be in trouble. And no disrespect to Nick Bonino, who's made a very good career for himself, but...
You know who would really like to
you're
have...
You're not a 2C, bud.
You know who would really like to have Nick Bonino as the Pittsburgh Penguins?
You know who would really like Nick Bonino is the San Jose
the
Sharks.
The Sharks. The team who drafted him.
Any guy with, like, a modicum of skill is, like, should be on the Sharks.
I hate it when you... I hate being reminded of that because it's so hurtful.
Oh, they, God. We didn't have even... Is Pete DeBoer in trouble?
No.
Yeah, because the GM is bananas.
Yeah.
Did you know that Nick Bonino was traded for Travis Moan?
I did know that, and it hurts every time I think about it.
I hate that so much.
Okay, let's quickly touch on the Sharks, because they're the one team that we actually follow, or at least you guys follow, that we haven't touched on. Mm. So,
well,
what's going on?
Well, I've made my gripes about the power play. I think Timo Meier
Well, we all
honest.
Know that's a problem.
Yeah.
From what I've seen so far...
How does Joe look? And I don't want to hear about young Joe Pavelski.
That's okay because he's not young. You won't hear about it.
Hot take alert. If the Sharks re-sign him, that would be a big mistake.
Yeah.
It would be. It would be more of a mistake than like the Burns deal.
But everyone's talking like they have to make sure they get him under contract.
Wait. Can we answer this question? What is Joe Pavelski right now?
A pseudo top line right winger.
He's Captain America. Don't say anything.
Well, he's a
it.
Right winger who like couldn't stay at center because of Joe Thornton.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say couldn't. It's just that they
didn't. But if you're that good at center, you don't get moved.
Well, I mean, yeah. Like, look, there's no doubt that he's so much better as Joe Thornton's right-hand man. Like,
yeah, who I could be decent
yeah,
as I, Joe Thornton's. Like, that's the only time that line applies is with Joe Thornton.
Right. So.
Okay, well, I think the answer to that question is that he's an aging... second line center / fringe first line winger who relies a lot on going to the difficult areas to get his points.
Mm.
And that's only going to get harder as he gets older.
Right. I mean, we've seen it. So many of his goals are,
but he is a good player. Like, I don't want to diminish that, but I just wouldn't want to be the team signing his next contract.
Well, yeah, I don't either. Cause he's 33 and he's slow. So
he's very slow. Very.
And it's not even like a slow that you can work with. Like,
remember when he was young Joe Pavelski at like age 28?
I mean, he was a bit of a late bloomer. There's no doubt.
No, but it's such a shame with the Sharks because like there's been so many instances where they could have just gone all the way and none of this would ever. No one would care. You know.
Yeah.
It's like with LA and Chicago. No one really cares.
Right.
They got their cups, and with the Sharks, it's kind of the same thing. Yeah.
And with the Sharks, look. The things that we thought were going to be problems are problems. Like, their penalty kill.
So what's up with Martin Jones?
To me, it looks like he's not focused. Like, the very first game against Philly.
Campbell.
It looked like he didn't come ready to play. Like,
I mean, that's how he looked in the playoffs to me. At least in the Edmonton series. Bad goals.
I mean...
In the beginning of the series.
Look. Those five hole goals, like those, shouldn't have gone in. But he still had a .930 save percentage. Like
fair,
like
fair,
he
fair.
Showed up ready to play,
fair and balanced.
But the goals that are going in are troubling. He looks surprised by some of them. He's still getting beat on straight shots with no screens. Granted, some of them have been great shots. Other ones have not been.
Right.
Look, it's confusing. He's a very technically proficient, big, athletic goaltender. There's no reason that some of these goals should be going in.
I just feel like he's missing that something.
I don't know. Because, I mean, he's made...
He needs a little more Tim Thomas in his game.
I don't want to hear that. But
well, he needs to fight for the puck a little bit more.
No, he does.
You know, like, I mean, I'm sorry, but, like, you can have all the technique in the world, but if you're not willing to, like, just have your face, you know, in the ice to make a save, then it doesn't matter.
Okay, you know? Haven't watched him play this season. So
I haven't. I don't need to.
Well,
I don't watch the games. I just have spreadsheets in front of me.
You just read hockey prospectus.
Yeah. Look, I just read baseball prospectus for hockey.
The point that I was about to make is he's still making all the high danger saves, like where he's diving left to right or right to left, yeah. And like having to move laterally. So he's still making big saves. You can tell that his heart's in it. It's just that for whatever reason,
skill level lacking.
I mean, look, hand-eye coordination is a skill, and it does at times appear to be lacking.
Well, the Sharks still have a good baseline of, you know, hopefully success. So,
and it is early,
and it's so early. It's like so we don't really know anything.
Yeah, I'm not.
But you know, we also can't ignore these games. You know, it's this weird balance of like, yes, on one hand, it's early and it's an 82 game grind, but at the same time, these games matter. Yeah. They all matter. Yeah. You know, it's points.
Yeah. So these are things to keep an eye on, but like this, we shouldn't be drawing like early conclusions. All right. Yet.
Well, I think that'll do it for this extended pod.
Yes. The one that was going to be 30 minutes and turned into an hour and 30 minutes.
Well, that's fine. We're going to be here this long anyway.
Yeah. That's true.
All right. Joe, any parting thoughts?
No.
No. Okay. No. Well, that makes my life easier. All right. Well, hey, if you've made it this far, first off, how the hell did you do that?
Yeah, congrats.
You earned it.
But second off, thank you so much. You know, the people that listen to us week in and week out, you know, it's like we truly appreciate it. We're truly humbled by it. It's been an awesome ride. We're looking forward to a great 2017-18. If you want more, make sure to follow us on Twitter at GarageHockeyPod, Facebook.com/GarageHockeyPod, obviously iTunes.com. Make sure to check us out over there. Leave a review if you really enjoy the show, want to support it. Hopefully we can get noticed, get some sponsors, get more, you know, possibly better equipment, sponsors, whatever it may be. Us getting noticed always helps. Once again, to the loyal listeners, thank you so much, and we'll see you at the next episode.